Today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Today's Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. I, of course, am your host, Dan Wilson. On a day, I had to give a day. I had a busy, some things going on with work yesterday. This is a Tuesday. I'll actually have two episodes for you today, kind of my own personal monologue episode, and a little bit later in the day, I'll have an episode posted for you, crossing over with friend of the podcast, Josh Neighbors, from Locked On Nationals, where we'll cross over, we'll talk all things Phillies Nats. I've crossed over with him before. The Phillies got a big series down in D.C., the first time they're playing the Nationals in 2021. So we'll talk about all things Phillies, all things Nationals. We'll get his take on how the Nats have been doing so far this season as these teams square off for the first of 19 times here in this three-game set in Washington. So we'll talk to him a little bit later. But I had to give my thoughts on what we saw over the weekend in Atlanta. And I'm actually happy that I'm doing this today on Tuesday as opposed to Monday or even Sunday, reacting to that game on Saturday, because this was a very, very up and down, polarizing, like polar opposite ends of emotions type of series from a Phillies perspective and a Braves perspective. First of all, the Phillies entered the Braves series down in Atlanta with a four-game winning streak. Swept through the Milwaukee Brewers, a four-game sweep. No one thought this team was capable of winning two in a row, right? So they go down to Atlanta, and they put on a show. The offense shows up. They win 12-2 at Truist Park in Atlanta, and that's been a house of horrors for them. They never seem like they can win there. It seems like the Braves always outmatched them, but they caught a Braves team and they really stuck it to them, and they put up some runs early in the game, I should say, and they just kept it coming. And this is a team that has really struggled to put up runs after they get a lead early in games. Like, they have been horrible at holding big leads, and they let the Brewers into a number of those games last week at Citizens Bank Park, and I thought they were going to do it again. And finally, they gave us that double-digit performance, which they had not put up double-digit runs all season long. And finally, they have a 12-2 win, nice and comfortable, no stress at all. Okay, so they get that out of the way. Then we come back on Saturday to a game where they were literally a strike away from winning this game. They had Pablo Sandoval on a 1-2 pitch with two outs in the ninth inning. Hector Neris in for the save, up by two, and he throws him a fastball that gets smacked over the fence. This game, despite the fact they had a five-game winning streak entering it, is the epitome of what being a Phillies fan over the past few years has been like. And the reaction you saw online, on the radio, on other podcasts you may listen to, and the reaction you're getting from me right now is because we've seen this loss before. We've seen blown games before. We certainly saw tons of blown bullpen games last year, but it's the fashion in which they're losing, right? And it didn't even end then. The Phillies blew not one, not two, but three separate saves in this game. Hector Neris blew a save. Didi Gregorius essentially blew another opportunity to hold the game with an error. And then they gave up four runs in the 12th inning, first with Eniel De Los Santos, then Matt Moore. They were up 7-4, couldn't even hold that, lose this game by a score of 8-7. When the Phillies lose, they make a real production of it sometimes. And they certainly made a real production of it on Saturday night. Again, a brutal loss, as bad as any game I can remember, dating back to the beginning of the Gabe Kapler era. Like, that's how bad this game was. It spanned nearly 5 hours. They should have had it won. And I gotta tell you, I've heard a lot of conversation lately as to whether or not Hector Neris should be the closer moving forward. And there's an argument to be made that he shouldn't. We've seen him pitch in closing situations for the Phillies dating back to, he's the longest tenured Philly. He's been on the team since 2014, and we've seen a lot of closing of Hector Neris, and oftentimes it's a high wire act, right? He's letting base runners on. He makes things super interesting. There were periods of times where he had to be sent down to the minor leagues, or the splitter is not splitting, and he just looks like he cannot be the closer of this team. Well, I got news for you. That is not what happened here on Saturday night. That pitch to Pablo Sandoval should have never been called. And it should, I blame JT Realmuto. Like, it should never have been called. It was a 1-2 count to Pablo Sandoval, who is a known free swinger. You got him on the splitter earlier in the at-bat. they're talking after the game as if he just mislocated the pitch. If you're going to throw that pitch, it can't be anywhere near the plate. You're up 1-2, right? I've never played in Major League Baseball. I don't claim to know more than these guys, but I do know enough to know that when you have a guy who's up there to do one thing, as Pablo Sandoval is, he is up there to do one thing. He represented the tying run, and he was up there to do a home run, or to hit a home run, I should say. And he hit a home run earlier in the season. He burned the Phillies with a pinch hit home run on opening day. Unfortunately, they came back to win that game in extras. He comes up in the ninth inning as the last chance for the Braves. That's what he's on the bench to do, and he smacks it over the fence. I know enough to say that fastball should be nowhere near the plate, and certainly nowhere near the heart of the plate, which is exactly where he threw it. I have no idea what in the hell JT is thinking calling a fastball in that position. That is not the usual Hector Neris blown save. Usually you can tell in the first couple of pitches the splitter isn't working, or he's been mixing in a slider this year, that his off-speed isn't working. It's not playing off his fastball. That was not the case. He looked great the other night, or looked certainly good enough to get the save. He obviously surrendered a runner to second base, but he had two quick outs for what we've seen Hector Neris do before, where he lets base runners get on and then is able to get out of it. His splitter was splitting. And again, he got Sandoval fooled earlier in the at-bat. This was not a classic Hector Neris blown save. I do not blame Hector Neris for this the other night. I get he's a major league pitcher. He could have shook him off. I'm frankly wondering how many guys in the Phillies clubhouse and the Phillies pitching staff, bullpen, starting staff, whatever, has the cachet to call off a catcher like JT Realmuto, who we oftentimes within this fan base refer to as the best catcher in all of Major League Baseball. How many guys do you think have the cachet or the flat-out guts to shake him off in a situation like that? JT knows best. He knows what he's doing. He's regarded as a smart player. This was a preventable mental blunder that blew this game. And while we're on the topic of Saturday's game, because it was the game that everyone reacted to on Sunday night, there's really not a whole lot to say. The offense has struggled mightily in certain games this season. And it's nice to see Andrew McCutchen get going, but he can't be the only run in a game. He leads off the game with a home run. He can't be the only run you score all night. And Aaron Nola wasn't good. And again, we'll have the is Aaron Nola an ace argument until the end of time. I'm going to give some criticism to him. This guy is bad in September. Every time they need him to be a stopper, when they need a bounce back win in big games, every time the pressure seems to shine on Aaron Nola, I don't get the sense that he has that it factor to respond. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope that I'm just generalizing here and that he is a big game pitcher. But we haven't seen him in a ton of big games, frankly, because the Phillies haven't been to the postseason in a while. And he's never had the opportunity to pitch in a postseason game. But when he's had the opportunity to pitch down the stretch in a postseason opportunity, last year on the final day of the season, when the Phillies had a potential play-in opportunity, and a win would have gotten them in. And take Sunday night, on Sunday Night Baseball, when the Phillies are in desperate need of a win to win a road series, which they still have not done this year, by the way. They were a strike away from finally winning a road series in Atlanta, of all places. And they couldn't do it because they threw a fastball to Pablo Sandoval. I didn't understand some of Joe Girardi's moves in this game. First of all, Rhys Hoskins, I get he's slumping again, streaky hitter that he is. Why is he getting a second off day? And then why are you double switching? And we know Joe Girardi loves to double switch. Why are you double switching Scott Kingery into the game when you have Hoskins on the bench and you move Bohm over to first instead of checking Hoskins into the game and putting him at first, and you have Andrew Knapp on the bench, and they eventually switched Nick Maton into the game, but you had him on the bench? Why does Hoskins need the second off day to begin with? Why are you double switching Scott Kingery into the game? You want another thing that I feel has been under-talked about? Giving away that game, you're in a game that, again, they blew three times. It was a tight game in Atlanta. They ended up allowing that two-run lead to slip in the ninth. You know Scott Kingery got three at-bats in this game? They were all outs, by the way, in case you were wondering. Doesn't look like he belongs on a major league field. That guy goes up there hacking. He's nowhere close to coming up with a hit. It's like an automatic strikeout. You were giving away outs putting Scott Kingery in that game. Guy shouldn't even be on the roster, and he was double switched in when you had significantly better options on the bench. I don't get it at all. I get by the end of the game, in terms of managing the pitching, you're left with Matt Moore and Yel De Los Santos. It worked for you earlier in the game, or not early in the game, earlier in the week, I should say. It's not, you can't flirt with fire. You can only flirt with fire for so long. I get you have the runner on second base. De Los Santos allows all three runs to come in, and then eventually Matt Moore comes in, and that's when the eighth run is eventually scored. Just an overall bad, brutal, brutal loss for the Phillies down in Atlanta, a game they easily should have won. And it was lost with mental errors. There was a physical error by Didi in extra innings, like I said, to blow the second save. But that's not where this game was lost. This was a preventable mental error. It was a huge mental blunder in a big game for the second week in a row. And that's why people, and myself included, are fed up with this team, even when they win five in a row. Because when they lose, they oftentimes make it a production effort. When they lose, when it rains, it pours. And when they go out and lose a game like that, good teams don't call the wrong pitch in that situation. Good managers don't stick guys off their bench who have no chance of getting a hit and double switch him in to get three at bats in a tight game, in a divisional game, and make head-scratching decisions. And I'll give you one other thing, because I did want to round out kind of my opening segment here with this. And this is an overall state of the Phillies thing. This just doesn't just pertain to Saturday, though it kind of speaks to that point. I had the opportunity for the first time actually to guest who I've had on this podcast before, Joe Giglio. I was producing him last night at 94 WIP, and he had a theory as to why the Phillies seem to come up small in these big games, whether it's national TV or big division opponents. You're dealing with a packed house in Atlanta, getting a spark on the road, whatever you want to call it. Big games where it seems like they need to rise to the occasion. Why don't they do it? And his theory was, you look up and down the roster, and whether it's guys they developed who have no history of winning, because the Phillies have been a losing organization for some time now, or you look at guys they brought from outside the organization, such as JT Realmuto, who's never played on a winning team, Bryce Harper, who's never gotten past the divisional round, Zach Wheeler, who was on the sideline for a run to the World Series, Jose Alvarado, who was not on the playoff roster last year for the Tampa Bay Rays. Like, there's not really anyone on this team who has a history of winning. And I would say that usually matters more in a sport like basketball or football, where you go get a guy and you say, well, this guy has led teams to championships, like a quarterback or a superstar in the NBA. That guy leads his team to championships. You can't put the same quality of argument does not exist in baseball, because you could be a stud on a bad team. It's possible. We see Mike Trout do it all the time, and we don't know what he's like in the postseason because he's only played three games in the postseason his entire career. And by the way, the Angels currently have two AL MVP candidates, and they're sitting in fourth place. Like, you can have superstar caliber players on your baseball team and not be good. But no one on this Phillies roster has much experience with winning, and that's what I view Joe Girardi's role as. Like, he was brought in here as more of a culture guy than Gabe Kapler, someone who can manage the clubhouse better than Gabe Kapler, someone who is good at relating to ballplayers, but also as a guy who has a history of winning. The guy managed the Yankees, and he managed them to a World Series. That's why Dave Dombrowski was brought here too. The guy has a history of winning in places like Boston. These are guys who have history in big markets, and I'll give Dombrowski a little bit more of a pass because he's newer than Girardi is, was hired this past offseason. He's not in the clubhouse with the guys. But for a roster that lacks a lot of experience and a lot of experience winning, and seems like they could use some of it in these big-time games when the moment does appear to get too big for them, isn't that the void Joe Girardi is supposed to fill? And have you seen any improvement there? Do the Phillies seem like they are prepared to play in these big games, whether it's from a mental standpoint, from a physical standpoint, the defensive mishaps they continue to have? Are they prepared in all senses of the word to play these games? Does Joe Girardi have this team prepared, and does he fill that void, which I think is a large one? I think it was a good point by Joe Giglio that he was making in regards to this team not having a winner. It's not really one that I'd put a ton of thought into, to be perfectly honest. But I'll take that a step further. What I added to the conversation, what I'm adding right here, right now, is it not Joe Girardi's responsibility to fill that void? He's the guy with winning experience, the guy managed a World Series team in New York where he managed in many more playoff games. The guy has been there, done that, has all the war stories. Why don't we see those results show up in big games? I think it's possibly due to a lack of preparation. More of the Locked On Phillies podcast coming right up. But first, I want to tell you about my friends at rockauto.com. Rock Auto With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all of the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his or her computer, choosing only the brands their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Chain stores have different price tiers for the professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible. Rather than changing the prices based on what the market will bear, just the way airlines do, RockAuto.com is for everybody, does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business, serving auto parts customers online for more than 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for the auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need is at RockAuto.com. Also want to tell you about my friends at BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing, and you can track all of the action at BetOnline.ag. This week has tons of sports action on the go. Of course, you have baseball going on in full swing. You have the NBA regular season coming to a close. You have the NHL regular season coming to a close. You got the Preakness coming up on Saturday. So there's tons and tons of stuff to bet on. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all of your sporting needs, including baseball, basketball, hockey, and even UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get in the game as teams prep for their runs to the postseason. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And again, use that promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Before I get to recapping this weekend series in Atlanta, again, a series that started very well for the Phillies, and they were a strike away from winning the first two games and winning a road series finally in Atlanta of all places, they lose 2 out of 3. It turns out to be a pretty negative weekend down against the Braves. I did want to quickly make the case for Hector Neris to remain as the closer, because there are a lot of people who do not want him to continue closing baseball games for this team. They think, oh, anyone else would be better. Some people say, you know, you have someone who's better in Sam Coonrod. And look, I hear the argument. Sam Coonrod has a 1.13 ERA thus far this season. He's pitched very, very well. A whip below 1 at .813. He's allowing, you know, hardly any walks. 1.1 per 9. And he's striking out 10 per 9, right? He's been very, very good. And Hector Neris, look, everyone feels like it's a high wire act every time he goes in. He allows that home run the other night to Pablo Sandoval, though I don't think it was really his fault. I think JT is more so to blame for that one. And I think overall he's pitched pretty well this season. He's got an ERA of 2.93. Again, it's early in the season. That's fluctuating a lot. He entered that game the other night in ERA below 2. And just about three quarters, if not a little more, of his appearances thus far have been scoreless. And I get sometimes he allows a lot of runners on base, and his numbers have not been as good as Sam Coonrod. But just consider this for a second. Sam Coonrod was used in a number of closing situations last year for the Giants. He was horrible in them. Like, his ERA was close to 10, 9.82 to be exact. Sam Coonrod does not exactly have a long track record of succeeding in those roles. And I know that they had there are other guys on this team with closing experience, whether it's Archie Bradley, who has closing experience. Maybe you want to go to him. Maybe it's a guy like Jose Alvarado who has electric stuff throwing. Now, the reason I wouldn't want to go to Alvarado, he's really your only reliable, in my opinion, lefty in the pen. I think they like matching him up more earlier in games. And I kind of feel the same way about Sam Coonrod, the same way about an Archie Bradley when he does come back. I kind of want to have those guys at my disposal. Now, we know Joe Girardi definitely wants to have a closer's role. He spoke in spring training, since the start of spring training, about having specific bullpen roles, and he would like to stick to that. But maybe ultimately the solution is just not having a specific closer's role. And if you're going to have one, if the rules you're going to have one, then I think Hector Neris, at least for now, I wouldn't remove him from the job based upon what we saw on Saturday night. I'll leave it at that. I think he has pitched well enough thus far this season that allowing two runs on a home run to Sandoval on a pitch that should have never been called is not enough for me to lose all my faith and Hector Neris. Yes, he has pitched in high-leverage situations for this team for a very long time and gone through a lot of rough stretches, and a lot of people do not like watching him pitch. But if you take him out of that closer's role, you risk potentially losing him mentally from ever being able to return to that closer's role. You move Sam Coonrod to a spot where he has failed before. You lose the ability to match Sam Coonrod up in high-leverage situations earlier in the game, which I quite frankly think, look, the final three outs, there is something to it. I get there is the idea and kind of an aura to closing games, right? But I want my best reliever at my disposal at any given time, because the biggest spot in the game could be in the seventh, could be in the eighth. Right now, that is Sam Coonrod. I want to play around with him a little bit. I don't want to just delegate him to the ninth inning. Don't think you can use Alvarado. You leave yourself no other left-handed options. Archie Bradley, I also want as kind of a, when he does eventually come back and he proves some more consistency. He had a 6 ERA when he went down. But assuming that he returns to form that we've seen him in previous seasons, I want to have him able to mix and match with guys earlier in games and higher leverage situations as well. If Neris continues to pitch poorly, yes, then you knock him out of that spot. I'm not removing him out of the closer's role based upon what we saw the other night. He's overall been pretty good. And frankly, I like the other guys and the roles they're in as well. Maybe this moves to a closer by committee situation. And also, just one other thing. I think people are maybe blinded by what goes on in other cities in terms of baseball teams. Like, I was thinking about this too. Unless you're Aroldis Chapman or Josh Hader or one of like the prime closers in the league, like most closers around baseball are what I like to call high wire acts. There's a lot of fan bases that are not happy with their closers. You don't have a ton of confidence in them holding a one-run lead. And if you don't believe me, so I'm a big fantasy baseball guy and enjoy looking at bullpen usage around all of Major League Baseball. There's a pretty cool site called Closer Monkey that basically ranks closer depth charts, like who the closer in each team is, who the first setup guy is, second setup guy is, like who's next in line to get the job. And if it's a team like the Tampa Bay Rays that has maybe been using Diego Castillo as their primary closer, but they also use him in the eighth inning too sometimes if there's a high leverage spot, they don't have a primary closer, they will note that too. Well, sometimes they also asterisk the guy if it's basically a closer by committee situation or they don't have a secure job. Go to that website and just check out how many guys are starred and how many guys on there. I mean, it's close to half the league are not in set closer roles or in comfortable positions or in cases where they are like a closer on a team that a team feels good about saying, yes, he is our guy. Like there are tons of closers around baseball that are constantly fighting for their job every time they go out there. And managers are mixing and matching different matchups more and more these days. I get it. It's not, the closer role is not the same thing that it maybe used to be where you just automatically put your best pitcher in the ninth inning. But I also got news for you. Mariano Rivera isn't running out of the bullpen for this Phillies team. There's not necessarily anyone in this bullpen that I, in the scenario of, hey, just go get me three outs in the ninth inning with the meat of the Braves order coming up, who do I feel confident to get those outs? I don't know that there's anyone in this Phillies bullpen that I feel confident to get those outs. Yes, Coonrod's been very good, but that's a tough team over there in Atlanta, and I would still be afraid that they're going to blow the game. Hector Neris, like I said, has overall been pretty good, and that splitter, I think, has looked very effective this year. He's working in a slider. He's playing it off his fastball, and when sequenced correctly, I think he looks very, very good. So I'm not ready to get rid of Hector Neris as the closer just yet. Maybe I'll get there in a week or two if he blows a couple more saves. Again, these things do fluctuate or snowball out of hand quickly. But if you think I'm crazy, that's fine. But I'm maybe going to be the last person on earth who still believes this guy has effectiveness as a closer and thinks that guys like Coonrod and Alvarado and Bradley would frankly be better served pitching in roles earlier in games where the Phillies have found themselves in a lot of high leverage situations in close games previous to the ninth inning. Now, getting back to recapping these games from the weekend, Phillies win 12-2 on Friday night, get 6 2/3 out of Zach Eflin. He allows just two runs. Finally, a lead that David Hale can, that we all felt comfortable watching David Hale in. He pitches the last two innings of this game, doesn't allow any runs. The offense finally exploded for double digits. Bohm had an RBI single to right. Gene Segura drove in two with a single to right in the first inning. Odubel Herrera capped off a six-run first with a home run that scored Bohm and Segura. They allowed a Dansby Swanson home run that made it 6-1. McCutcheon hit into a fielder's choice 7-1. Acuna RBI single 7-2. And here's where the Phillies really start to blow it open. A Bohm single 8-2. McCutcheon single 9-2. Realmuto homered with Bryce Harper on base. That's 11-2. And then Odubel Herrera caps off the scoring in the eighth with a fielder's choice 12-2 for the fight in Phils. This team looked hot. That's five in a row. They just came off a sweep off the Brewers. And now they're blowing the Atlanta Braves out in Atlanta. What can't this team do, right? Well, what this team cannot do is win close games, apparently, in big spots, which is what they blew on Saturday night, game they easily should have had. They lose this one by a score of 8-7, a game that they led 3-0, a game that they led by a score of 7-4 in extra innings, and a game in the ninth inning that they were up 3-1 and had Pablo Sandoval, a free-swinging home run only guy, down to his final strike on a 1-2 pitch, and they blew it. It's unbelievable that they found a way to lose this game. Didn't understand, as I mentioned, this double switching from Girardi going to Scott Kingery for three at-bats, which is a total waste when you had Hoskins and still Andrew Knapp on your bench. Either one of them, I would have felt better at first. Didn't make a whole lot of sense. Girardi doing that in this game didn't make a whole lot of sense. The pitch sequencing, and they managed to blow a lead in the ninth inning, in the 11th, and in the 12th. And it was just such a backbreaker, so much to break down from this one, and as bad as any losses we've seen, frankly, all season, dating back to last season, maybe in the entire Girardi plus Kapler era. I don't think I'm exaggerating by saying that. That's how bad this loss was. And lost in the thick of everything was, again, a pretty good Vince Velasquez start, going 5 1/3, two hits, allowing just one run, six strikeouts, 90 pitches. That's what you're looking for out of Vince Velasquez. So hats off to him for doing his job, but a thousand other things going on in this one that's going to make everyone forget about that. And then on Sunday Night Baseball, just totally coming out flat. They needed a big start out of Aaron Nola. They didn't get it. Gets pulled after 58 pitches, only goes four innings, allows five runs. Once again, did not have his sharpest stuff. And the only run scored in this game was an Andrew McCutcheon home run on the first pitch of the game. Nola comes right back out in the first inning, allows four runs. A Freddie Freeman home run in the third inning. That's five. By the way, he came in slumping to this series. And so nice of the Phillies to always get Freddie Freeman right back on track. Always gets the Braves right back on track. Doesn't it feel like this is the kind of thing that gets their momentum rolling, gets his personal momentum rolling? It's absolutely ridiculous that the same script seems to be followed every single year. But that's how frustrating of a series this was. A series that the Phillies were a strike away from winning down in Atlanta. They managed to lose Saturday and Sunday's ball games, and that's why this team, it's just so hard for many, myself included, to really buy into this team as a true contender. They still have a winning record, by the way. They're 18-17, and as we sit here on Tuesday morning, they're a game out of first place behind the New York Mets and what still remains a bad National League East. But it's just so hard to get into this team and buy into this team fully when even when they win five in a row, including a four-game sweep against Milwaukee. You know a road trip and a bad road outing is coming, and you know a game where they blow it three times in the 9th, 11th, and 12th feels like it's coming. They just find new ways to lose. They find new ways to lose in heartbreaking fashion. They make a huge production of it, and then sometimes the offense and your best pitcher, or you know what's supposed to be your best pitcher, what's supposed to be the ace of your staff, totally comes up flat. The inconsistencies, it's justifiably is driving everyone nuts. More of the Locked On Phillies podcast coming right up. But first, I want to tell you about my friends at Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, plus the occasional limited time flavor? When you talk to a Built Bar fan, they're definitely passionate about their favorites. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out. There's coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double caramel, or double chocolate, rather, salted caramel. I'm getting hungry just thinking about it here. So there's something for everyone. And not only Built Bar flavor, not all Built Bar flavors have the exact same health benefits. But look, it's pretty close. Most flavors have 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories. But a couple of the other flavors, they have just 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 4 to 5 grams of sugar in all bars, 4 to 5 grams of net carbs in all bars. Again, 9 amazing flavors, all tasty, but the best part is they are all healthy. Order today, get the raspberry, the mint brownie, whatever type of Built Bar you would like. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Looking ahead to tonight and the three games ahead down at Nationals Park, again, this is the first time the Phillies are lining up with the Washington Nationals. They already have 9 games under their belt with both the New York Mets and the Atlanta Braves. Still have not stepped on the field with the Nationals or the Marlins yet. They'll have the Nationals for 3 this week, 3 at home with the Marlins next week, and then they'll actually travel down to Miami later this month. But 3 on this road trip in Washington before they head down to Dunedin to take on the Blue Jays this weekend. But this is another big divisional series and a team that is very beatable. They're currently last in the National League East. They are 29th out of 30 major league teams in terms of runs scored. They have not hit at all so far this season, and they're getting some very hittable pitchers in these matchups. First, we'll start with tonight's matchup. It'll be Chase Anderson going up against Eric Fetty. Not exactly a pair of two aces here, guys with ERAs both in the fives. Anderson, in his last start, he went just 4 1/3, surrendered 3 runs, 4 walks, a couple of strikeouts in his May 5th performance that was last Wednesday against the Brewers. So hopefully he can go a little bit deeper into this game. The start before that was more impressive, in my opinion. He went 5 innings, allowed just 1 run. Ultimately, that's what I'm looking for out of Chase Anderson. Hopefully the bullpen, after a horrific outing or horrific series down in Atlanta where they had to be used a lot, hopefully they're well rested after the off day on Monday and they're ready to go down on Nats Park, or down in Nats Park, I should say, following an off day in a game where you have a starting pitcher who isn't known for going especially deep into games. Is your 5 guy, probably not expecting a ton from him. So hopefully the bullpen is well rested, ready to go in this one. But again, an opportunity for the offense to hit a guy in Eric Fetty, who comes in with a 5.27 ERA this season. On Wednesday, it'll be Zach Wheeler going up against John Lester. Zach Wheeler, he's coming off about as good of an outing as you could have, short of a no-hitter or a perfect game. 9 innings, 3 hits, no runs allowed, 8 strikeouts against the Brewers back on Thursday in the day game. A tremendous outing from Zach Wheeler, coming off an outing where he'd allowed 4 early runs against the Mets and then settled in. So he has really looked good so far this season. And, you know, we're going to start having the debate, if things keep trending in this direction, who would you rather have in a winner-take-all, do-or-die game, Aaron Nola or Zach Wheeler? Because, again, while neither of them have, this is still early in the season, but Nola has not pitched well in what I'll say big games relative to his own career. And Zach Wheeler's pitching like a stud right now. So if things keep trending in this direction, and frankly, it'll be more up to Wheeler if he pitches at this number one caliber, and that's what he's pitched like so far this year. He has pitched basically like a number one. His ERA is down to 2.83, and he has had multiple outstanding outings so far this season. I think back to April 3rd against the Braves, 7 innings, no runs. I think back to April 26th in St. Louis, 8 innings, 1 run, almost won a complete game. And then May 6th, last Thursday against the Brewers, 9 innings, no runs. He is a guy who has pitched like one of the Phillies' aces so far this season. He'll be countered by John Lester, who has only pitched in 2 games so far this season. He's gone 5 innings in each of them, allowed 0 runs in the first against the Marlins, allowed 3 runs against the Braves back last Thursday as well. This is a guy who, the best part of his career, is well in the rearview mirror. He's got a 2.7 ERA so far this season in 2 games, but had an ERA over 5 a year ago. 2019 had an ERA of 4.46. I mean, John Lester has been around a while. Again, a very hittable pitcher for this Phillies team. So hopefully someone the offense can get going on, or going against in this one. And then on Thursday in the day game, it'll be a pair of, you know, pretty good pitchers as well. It'll be Zach Eflin going up against Patrick Corbin. Patrick Corbin coming off a start against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, where he went 6 innings, allowed 3 runs. His ERA, though, overall so far this season has not been very good. He's gotten shelled a couple of times, especially earlier in the season. His first 2 games, he had back-to-back starts, one at Dodger Stadium and one at home against the Diamondbacks, where he went 4 1/3, allowed 6 runs, and then against the Diamondbacks, went just 2 innings and allowed 9 earned runs total. His ERA jumped above 21. It's now down to a cool 7.36. So a guy still trying to find his footing in the early going this season. And a guy who's looked pretty good in Zach Eflin. I mentioned he looked really good in that game on Friday night against the Braves when the Phillies actually won, went 6 2/3, allowed just 2 runs, 8 strikeouts. His ERA is 3.38 this season, and I highlighted last week on the show how good the Phillies' starting pitching has been in general. Sometimes there have been starts out of Nola or otherwise where they really felt like they needed a big-time performance and didn't get it. But as a whole, the Phillies' big three in starting pitching has carried a lot of their success so far this season, and Zach Eflin, of course, has been a part of that. We'll preview more of this series and get more of a Nationals perspective on this entire series again later on today when I cross over with Josh Neighbors from Locked On Nationals. Until then, have a great Tuesday, everybody. If you want to follow the podcast, of course, you can do so at @LO_Phillies, or be sure to follow myself on Twitter @Dan_Wilson4 for tuned into all things Phillies, Philadelphia sports, and of course, Locked On Phils. Get all the sports news you need in less than 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.